Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Human Services Finance Committee. I call this meeting to order. Members, we have a quorum present. With that, I will begin with the approval of minutes for February 16, 2023. Chair Fischer.
Thank you, Chair Nora. I'd like to move approval of minutes from February 16, 2023, please.
Chair Fischer moves the approval for minutes for February 16, 2023. Any discussions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the minutes for February 16, 2023 are now adopted. Members, we do have three bills today. And the first bill we have is House File 399. Representative Curran, welcome to the committee. We'll move that House File 399 be laid over for possible inclusion. Please introduce your bill and proceed with the testimony. 339, House File 339.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Noor and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 339. This bill removes an unnecessary requirement for a separate license for community residential service providers who want to support people using assistive technology during overnight hours. This bill is being brought forward by ARM, the Trade Association for Residential Service Providers, providing services to people with disabilities through the four different disability waivers. ARM members know that utilizing all tools, including assistive technology, can solve not only service delivery needs, but also utilize direct support professional staff in the most efficient way possible. We've all heard from constituents about the crisis that's worsening by the day for individuals that access supports through through a waiver service provider. And with direct support professional vacancy rates exceeding 30%, providers are working week by week, day by day, and in my experience, sometimes hour by hour, to ensure that shifts are covered and that people are being supported safely. The language in front of you today removes an unnecessary requirement that providers obtain a separate license to support people utilizing different forms of assistive technology during the overnight hours, even when they're already using such technology during the day. Our bill puts in place new requirements to ensure safety when providing assistive technology supports directly into 245D, which is the statute that regulates waiver providers, regardless of the time of day. By doing this, we remove a barrier of providers getting a separate license. We streamline the processes, and it reduces administratively duplicative requirements. Beyond the need to pay direct support professionals more to help overcome our chronic staffing shortage, we also have to look for common sense fixes that break down barriers and allow for creative, safe solutions to support people in the manner that they want to be supported. This bill does just that, and I ask for your support. And with that, I will turn it over to testifiers to tell you more.
Thank you so much, Representative Curran, for your full presentation of the bill. The first testifier on the bill is Sarah Grefstrom. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Sarah Grefstrom. I am the Director of State and Federal Policy with ARM, an association dedicated to leading the advancement of home and community-based services and supporting over 160 residential service providers across the state. And I apologize in advance for the squeaky noise on that side of the room. That is my daughter, and she is having way too much fun with the chairs. when they go up and down, it's a lot of fun. And she's got headphones on and I think is oblivious to the fact that she is making a lot of noise right now. So
she's welcome here.
Yeah, thank you. So thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House File 339, a bill that removes the requirement for providers to obtain a separate license or variance when supporting people through assistive technology during the overnight hours in a community residential setting, and instead inserts new remote overnight supervision language in 245D, the law governing the licensure of waiver service providers. The requirement of a separate license for alternative overnight supervision with technology, or AOST, went into place about 15 years ago, established by a small working group of both providers and department staff who were tasked with getting this new technology service off the ground. At that time, the utilization of technology to support people with disabilities was a new concept. Think about any piece of technology in your life and how it has changed in 15 years. We know that technology is a critical part of the services we provide to people with disabilities that can help promote independence and be a resource in a time of growing worker shortages. We have seen the use of technology grow and the technology available drastically improve, yet despite these changes and improvements, the requirements put in place over 15 years ago remain the same. I want to take a moment to share a success story that one of our members recently shared with me. At a home in northern Minnesota, four gentlemen have lived together for a few years, and they've had direct support staff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The gentlemen were interested in being more independent, and their interdisciplinary teams and the men living in the home agreed to try using overnight remote supports. As the team worked to implement remote supports, it was felt that the on-site staff would need to come into the house at 7 a.m. so that the men could be assisted with waking up, getting breakfast, and getting ready for the day. This had always been something the staff supported the men with, and the team thought that they would continue to need this support first thing in the morning. Within the first week of remote supports for overnight being implemented, the men surprised the staff by getting up on their own, getting breakfast on their own, and helping each other when needed. In fact, the men in the home proceeded to tell the staff they had it covered and did not need help. The men proudly spoke about doing these tasks, and the morning staff reported that the guys were not only being more independent in their morning routines, but as they continued to use the remote supports, their confidence in being able to do things on their own grew. The men now proudly talk about having remote supports at night and enjoy showing new staff how the technology works and how they use it when needed. Expanding the use of AOST helps support further independence. I know this committee has heard about the catastrophic workforce crisis within disability services. We have over 30% of our DSP positions open, and providers are making difficult decisions every day to close or consolidate homes or reduce capacity in the homes they currently support. The use of remote supports in CRS homes has allowed providers to relocate existing staff to homes that need the staff in-house on the overnight, and in some cases, remote supports has helped homes remain open where due to staffing shortages, they may have been in danger of closure. When we support increased independence through the use of technology, regardless of where the person lives, it means we are reducing reliance on caregivers. Expanding the use of AOST is a workforce solution. Requiring a separate AOST license is an unnecessary barrier to supporting people with assistive technology and is duplicative to other rules and regulations that providers must follow, including 245D, monitoring technology usage policies, and the department's federally approved remote support policy. The use of technology is an underused tool, and removing this duplicative requirement will help expand the use of this service, promote independence, and relieve some of the pressure providers have in filling overnight shifts, freeing up staff to provide important support services during the day. With that, I want to thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee has.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I just wanted to check in if there's anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill. See none. Representative Crum, did you have a question?
Just a quick statement that pointing that we need to strong arm the bureaucracy to update to new and better. And it's good to see a bill that's looking out to bring us up to date where we should be, especially helpful for the issues we're seeing now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Plum. Representative Kilo.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Are we on to discussion of the bill?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
I appreciate you bringing this forward. In my community, I went on tours of some of the facilities that we have, and we have technology in some of our homes. And it was one of the most amazing experiences I had seen because it was helping a population, like you said, feel really independent in spaces that maybe they don't often feel like that. And I do know that we talk a lot about workforce shortage and what are areas that we need to kind of invest in to make sure that we can still provide the services that our communities need, even if we don't have all hands on deck. If some of those hands happen to be technology based, I think it's beautiful. And so I really appreciate you doing this, and I know that my community will absolutely be grateful for this as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Kina. So I think part of my discussion in the policy, Representative Kina, you have a quick question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative, I've heard your name pronounced Curran, and I've heard it pronounced Curran, but I haven't heard you say it. Will you tell me how you say your last name?
Curran.
Thank you. So, Representative Curran, thank you so much for the bill. You know, I get very frustrated that we offer tons of solutions that just give more money without actually trying to solve a problem. And I think that this legislation solves the problem. So I really, really appreciate you bringing this forward. I can't imagine why anyone would not support this. It seems like there are really good protections in place for if there are problems. There's certainly like good disclosure in place so that families and clients are aware of the level of care they'll be receiving. I think it is a great bill. Thank you.
Representative Carr, do you have any?
No, I just thank you for the, I know the discussion was brief today, but I appreciate the overwhelming support. I think it's time that we remove this barrier. It's a really simple bill, but it'll have really meaningful implications for people to live out their independence. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I'm also working on a broad-based the technology piece so that we can protect the data. So hopefully by the end, we will have that section included and we'll have more conversation on that. So thank you so much for the bill. With that, I hear no further discussions. I renew my motion that House File 339 be laid over. So the bill is laid over. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next bill on the calendar is House File 716. Representative Finke, welcome to the committee. So we'll move House File 716. To be laid over for possible inclusion. With that, Representative Finke, please introduce the bill to us.
Do you want me to do my bill introduction before the amendment?
You have an A1 amendment. Did you want to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, please.
Members, we have an A1 amendment. Representative Finke, I move the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? See none. The A1 amendment is now adopted. With that, to your bill.
Yep.
To your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Noor. And just very quickly, the A1 amendment was an amendment that incorporated technical assistance from Department of Human Services and Representative Hicks. Big thank you to Representative Hicks. So the amendment just added protective language for individuals accessing these services, and it just puts us in a better shape. So to the bill. I'm here to present HF 716, which aims to remove barriers for people with disabilities to living in their own homes. In 2021, the legislature adopted a policy framework for disability services in Minnesota that people with disabilities should get to make informed decisions about where they live, and that people should have the option to choose to live in their own homes rather than congregate or other provider-controlled settings. We have come a long way as a state towards ensuring that this is reality, but people who want to live in their own homes continue to face many barriers, and the direct care workforce shortage is making it even more difficult. When people live in their own homes, they have more autonomy over their lives, more options for being a part of their community. It is vital that we uphold our promise to people with disabilities that they will have a choice in where they live and that we are committed as a state to their inclusion in society and have a choice in how they will live their lives. House File 716 would remove barriers to people choosing to live in their own homes, particularly amidst the current pressing direct care workforce crisis. So the bill does four things. First, it expands options for people who live in their own homes to share services. This is an important option that would permit people who live together when they fully agree to share service providers for support that they need. This is a workforce shortage solution that would allow more people to be supported by less staff in their own homes. Next, the bill makes three changes related to all forms of individualized home support, IHS. For many individuals living in their own home, IHS is a critical service to stabilizing their housing and remaining in their communities. Changes to IHS include allowing the unit of service for IHS to be either 1 hour or 15 minutes. This option would streamline things on the back end but have no impact on the flexibility that people receive in their service. The bill would also allow for indirect billing
for IHS. While it is always the first option to directly support individuals accessing services and their goals, there are instances when a staff may need to follow up or coordinate on their client's behalf with their consent. We modeled this after other waiver services that allow for indirect time billing like employment services and positive support services. This is a flexibility that would ensure workers can best support people accessing services on their goals and type of tasks that help them maintain their living in community. So with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you. First is Mr. Schmidt. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Stephen Schmidt. I am a supervising attorney at Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid and the Minnesota Disability Law Center. And today, with their permission, I'm going to read the written testimony of my former client's parents in regard to the changes to individualized home supports in this proposal. We are Dennis and Susan Kane, parents of Hannah Kane. Having grown up in the 1960s and being peripherally aware of state institutions, one of the many fears we had upon realizing the gravity of our daughter Hannah's disability was like all parents, where and how would she live after we were no longer able to care for her? This concern was supplanted by many, many more pressing and immediate concerns as she and we negotiated the doctors, therapy, and educational systems, and so many other challenges as she grew to become the vibrant, outgoing young lady that we know today. Many hurdles, both unexpected and unforeseen, have been encountered and dealt with, but now we find ourselves facing head-on in very real time that initial fear of what is going to become of her after we are gone. One of, if not our biggest concerns we thought we dealt with for now was housing. Hannah lives in a home of her own. We planned and worked hard to save and pay for this home. She has staff that come in to assist her with essential life functions and ensure she is safe. To accomplish this staffing, we were forced to switch from the DD waiver using CDCS to DD waiver with IHS supports. One of the unintended consequences of that change is the reason for bringing this to the attention of the legislature. We have discovered that according to the current state law, Hannah cannot get the support staff she needs if she vacations out of state. Previous to the change, she was able to bring staff with her when she traveled, and she was free to travel with staff with or without her family. We always paid for her and her staff's travel expenses, but the waiver paid for staff wages for staff via CDCS the same as it would if she was simply at home. We request that the statute be amended. Our wish is for Hannah to be able to travel to visit her many cousins and friends that we have fostered relationships with throughout her life now and in the future. When we are no longer living, it is our goal to have these relationships to help her added natural supports only achievable by being able to travel. It seems obvious that the IHS program was missed, as most of the other DD waiver services allow out-of-state travel. Frankly, the way the law is worded, IHS disallows Hannah to go to Wisconsin for lunch with her staff, which is 10 minutes from her Minnesota home. In short, our fear and our greatest concern will be that she is trapped in her own home, just as previous generations, she may have been trapped in an institution. We do not believe that was the intent of the law when it was written, and indeed contradicts the freedom to travel freely that we all take for granted. Instead, it discriminates against people with disabilities living in their own homes to travel with the supports they need. We respectfully request the law be amended so that Hannah and all of her peers can live the life they deserve, travel if they wish with support staff, and not be restricted by any of the waiver programs. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Schmidt, and thank you for sharing the story about Susan and what members, it's in your packet, the written statement. With that, the next person on the list is Jason Bloomquist. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I am Jason Bloomquist. I am a self-advocate and consumer of services. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak today, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's my honor to speak on behalf of House File 716. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story. I received shared care services for over 10 years with a partner in Hennepin County, at which time I saw many benefits. As a homeowner, it allowed us to pool resources in order to make things more affordable and equitable for the both of us, with two income streams and a more stable environment for both of us. And we were able to have a more customized living situation to meet our needs. It allowed for less staff in the house at any one time, which not only protected our privacy, but our personal health, which is acutely important now during the COVID-19 pandemic. These factors also made it easier to obtain qualified home care staff, as they found it advantageous to earn higher wages in one spot while meeting the needs of two clients. We also had the freedom to come and go as we want and live our lives as we choose. Which is not always possible in group homes and other more restrictive home care settings. Shared services are currently available under the PCA program through consumer-directed community supports, or CDCS. I am currently on the CADI waiver with IHS Home Support. Under IHS, I would no longer be able to receive shared care services should I choose to have another roommate to help me pay bills or for companionship, as many people choose to live with a companion. This is a prime example of why shared services must be offered under all in home services and waivers. It is a direct care workforce solution that is a win for everyone involved. While it may not be for everyone to utilize, it's a choice that needs to be available for all who depend on home care to live their daily lives. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jason Bloomquist, for sharing your story. Appreciate that. Is there any other person who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, member discussions. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Finke, for bringing this forward and for working through the amendment. It's really, really important to me that people have choice in where they live. Mm-hmm. And it's also really, really important to me that when we start talking about any work that's being done without the person, that there's that informed consent component and that we're making sure we're doing with and in support of and not for and taking away. And so I am so grateful for the amendment. I just wanted to say thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you, Representative Hicks, for making the bill better. I know that we did.
Any further discussions from members? Lead Newbridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Finke. This falls into the same category as the last bill, that it actually solves a problem, and I am thrilled to hear the bill. I do have a couple of questions. I'm looking at page 3 particularly, and I'm wondering if you could walk through. I mean, it talks about having a contingency plan for each individual served that determines how services will be provided and billed when a person who shares services with the individual is absent. due to illnesses or other circumstances. And then on 3.7 and 3.8, it says an individual or individual's representative may withdraw from participating in a shared services agreement at any time. I'm just wondering if we have an idea of what that might look like if we have a shared services agreement in place. What it might look like if one of those members, or if there's three people, if one or two of those members want to withdraw from that shared service agreement, what would that look like for the remaining client who has entered into that agreement? Just what would that look like?
I can speak to that if you would like, or...
I would love to have you.
In my situation, I was with a partner, and we broke up, and at which time, we notified the case manager, and they simply switched the hours back to 1-on-1 hours, and it was pretty much a seamless change. I did have to, the reason I switched to IHS hours is because they pay more, and in this job market it's very hard to find a PCA that wants to work for, you know, $13 an hour. So my staff currently make $20 an hour, which has done wonders for retention of staff and just the level of interest and the level of candidate that you can get. But as far as switching from one to the other, it's just really a simple change in the paperwork. And if, like, one is hospitalized, then the other that's left there during the interim would, again, just have to notify their county worker and have that short-term change made to their service agreement. So it's a very simple solution.
Lead Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Blomquist. That was really informative. I appreciate that. And can I just ask also, this process of informing your caseworker and switching over, like you said, either temporarily or permanently to the 1-on-1 care, how cumbersome is that process for you?
Mr. Blomquist.
Yes, it's a matter of a phone call. This is what's happening, and this is how we need to bill. So it's pretty straightforward. I think a lot of the problem, or not problem, but a lot of the hurdles to these bills is that people don't have the life experience working with them, and it's not as complicated as it might seem. You know, shared care is also one of the benefits of it, is it actually saves the county money by doing it that way, because paying for 1-on-1 service for each client costs more than it does to combine services, and you can still have some 1-on-1 hours and some shared, so it can be set up to meet the needs of any two or more people, you know, if it's done properly and the people are properly advocated for. It's a very good solution.
Lead Newburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Blomquist. That was really informative. I just learned a lot. I appreciate that. And thank you, Representative Finke. I think that this is a bill that as Mr. Bloomquist indicated, actually saves counties money and it provides better services to folks in their communities. I think it's a great bill. Thank you.
I just want to thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. And I just want to reiterate a little bit of that point that these shared services are very tailored, right? What it means to be sharing space. Sometimes you share space, you have romantic partners, roommates, people come, people go, right? And it's very important that we're making sure that when those changes are made, everyone's services remain intact, and nobody wants to see any confusion there. So I appreciate the detail that you're looking at.
Any further follow-up with Lee Newton? Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Finke, and thank you to our testifier today. I just want to say, you know, I am really so grateful for this bill. I have some tremendous families in my district who are very passionate about how they care for their loved ones. And in particular, this scenario reminds me of Sam. Sam, which is a little bit more high functioning, but at some point in time, Sam came to want to be independent, like any normal child would, right? To be able to have his own space, his own room, to live independently, but also to have friendships, to live in an arrangement in a home that they purchased that he shares with two other roommates. And as we've been going through different processes and looking at the possibility of shared services, previously they had been able to use shared services. But under some of the new systems, they were not able to do that. But as the testifier so aptly pointed out, not having to have quite so many folks in the home tripping over each other when they could have a shared provider is really nice, to have less folks, mm-hmm. to have someone you really know that you get to know to help retain that employee and to save money as well for all concerned. And it really does help with that retention, you know, as the residents get to know that provider really well and be able to have that comfort in their home. So I really want to say thank you for this bill. I know it will make a big difference for some folks in my district, and particularly for Sam and the Sholanders. But also, of course, want to shout out to the Amundsens and the Ringies and my district as well for all of their tremendous work to get independence for their children. Thank you.
Professor Fink, did you want to comment on that?
Thank you, Chair and Representative. And yeah, I appreciate the support of comments, the support from everybody. This is just a good bill. We're empowering people to live their lives autonomously in ways that are going to serve them better than anyone else could ever tell them how they best live. So we should be supporting that, and it sounds like we are. So thank you.
See no further discussions. I will renew my motion that House File 716 to be laid over as amended. So the bill is laid over. So thank you so much, Representative.
Thank you.
The last of the list bill on our agenda is House File 813. Representative Hicks. Do you want to move House File 813 to be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, but I do have an amendment.
You do have. I see you have A1 amendment. Do you want to move A1 amendment?
Yes, please.
Did you want to explain, or did you want to just put the bill in the shape that you want?
No, I'd love to explain. So actually, the amendment is in response to some feedback that we got in Human Services Policy from Representative Baker. To get the distribution plan and reporting kind of in a little bit of a more accountability state. So.
With that, member discussions on A1 amendment to House File 813. See no discussions. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? See none. The A1 amendment is now adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Committee. The bill in front of you today was brought forward by ARM, which is the Trade Association for Residential Waiver Service Providers. This bill does two things. It would first provide recruitment and retention bonuses for all of the 30,000 direct support professionals currently working to incentivize and also to incentivize up to 13,000 individuals to hopefully join the workforce because we have a shortage. Second, the bill provides a $4 million appropriation for DEED to develop an implement a multi-pronged public awareness campaign aimed at bringing new employees into the caring professions. We know we need to attract folks into this important work. We've heard in this committee from our constituents and from testifiers and from providers about the catastrophic impact that the current workforce shortage is having on services supporting people with disabilities. We know that people living in group homes are experiencing staff shortages and sometimes even closing of facilities. We also know that people receiving work supports in our community-based facilities are struggling to be integrated into the community and participate in the activities they want to in the community due to lack of staffing on a daily basis and an ongoing basis. We cannot continue to ignore this issue, and we have to, like Lead New Brindley said, come up with actual solutions. I believe this bill is a solution. Part of a solution. Obviously, we need more, lots of options. Direct support professionals have an unbelievably difficult job. I was a direct support professional for 19 years while working my professional job, going to college, and in high school. This is a profession that, for me, was the beginning of my advocacy and my life's work. These folks administer medications, they take people on outings. They comfort people when they're experiencing a loss. They're there for major life events and day to day. They are an important component of people's lives and an important and vital component of true integration. We know that the current wage is just over $15 an hour, but we know that that wage amount does not incentivize folks to stay in the field. Professionals who don't leave and stay in the field end up working long shifts, multiple shifts, back-to-back shifts. And the vacancy rate is currently the highest in the state, with over 30% of these positions currently open. Talk to any of our DSPs, and they will tell you that they do this work because of the people that they support. They will tell you how valuable this work is for them and for the people that they support and their families. But we are losing these incredible staff people because they cannot afford to stay in this really important profession. This legislation aims to help them out financially and at the same time raise awareness about what a great job this is. It is an amazing job to do, and a lot of folks don't even know that it's out there, and they don't know where they can go with it. We have made direct support professionals as a state not viewed as an important career when they are an important and vital career. And this bill aims to recognize their importance financially, but also to lift up this career path and this career choice to bring and welcome others into the field. With that, I will turn it over to my testifiers to share a little bit more.
Welcome to the committee. Ms. Grafstrom, introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, committee members, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Sarah Grafstrom. I am the Director of State and Federal Policy with ARM. ARM members provide residential services through the four disability waivers. We support people living in many different settings, from community residential settings to people's own home or family home to people living in an ICFDD. While each service is different and each home unique, they have one thing in common. Every service is on the verge of collapse because we don't have staff. I was recently talking to one of our members who shared with me the story of how he got started in the field. He shared that he started as a direct support professional while in college. He said he did not make a lot of money, but it was comparable to other jobs at restaurants or retail that he was considering. Through his position as a DSP, he was able to gain experience working with individuals with disabilities that ended up guiding him into his career in the field now. This member's story is not different than many that I talk to, not different than Representative Hicks. And I ask, how will this happen now? How can we attract direct support professionals into our field when they are paid considerably less than similar jobs outside the field? What will the downstream impact in 2, 5, or 10 years be when we don't have experienced or skilled staff? The time to act is now. Another member recently shared with me that as an organization, they consistently have 40 to 50 open positions on a base fully staffed employee count of just under 200. These consistently open positions not only limit the amount of support and services the organization can provide, they have created an ongoing level of stress for all employees that is unhealthy and unsustainable. These employees have been asked to take on a rising workload with no foreseeable end in sight, causing the loss of experienced and valuable employees who choose to find other employment rather than work under these circumstances. House File 813 is one piece of the broader workforce solution. First and foremost, as Representative Hicks stated, we need to pass reimbursement rates that increase direct support professional wages, but we also need to show our current staff that they are valued and find new ways to bring new staff into the profession. House File 813 provides for a $1,000 retention or recruitment benefit for every DSP across the state. We estimate that we currently have 30,000 DSPs in our workforce with a reported vacancy rate of over 30%, leaving approximately 13,000 DSP positions currently open. House File 813 also contains language that allocates $4 million to DEED to work with stakeholders in launching a multi-year, multifaceted public awareness campaign. Our goal is simple. We aim to attract workers into the caring profession. Modeled after a similar campaign that was launched in Ohio, we plan to tell stories in a variety of ways and mediums, including television, billboards, radio, social media, etc. You have heard over and over in various settings that our caring professions in Minnesota are experiencing severe workforce challenges. Providers continue to use all the tools in their toolbox, using job sites like Indeed, job fairs, word of mouth, but it's not enough. What we are proposing with this appropriation is to take it up a notch in a big way. Make the caring profession something that people hear about on multiple platforms and can envision themselves participating in as a career. Our ultimate goal is having a broad-based public campaign to heighten the awareness of the caring profession and to attract new workers into the various health and human services sectors. The proposal calls for DEED to convene stakeholders as well as work with a creative service company to develop the right concept and zero in on the right platforms. Our initial ideas for content include focusing on high school graduates, delivery people, a mother going back to work. Throughout the PSA, you can get the sense that they are looking for a more meaningful career where they can help their fellow Minnesotans. We need to draw back the curtain and show why a career in the caring profession is rewarding, fulfilling, and something that is deeply appreciated. With that, I will turn it over to Tom Gillespie with Living Well Disability Services to talk more about some of the current challenges his organization is facing.
Thank you, Mr. Gillespie. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. For the record, my name is Tom Gillespie. I'm the president and CEO at Living Well Disability Services. We're a nonprofit provider of residential care and in-home care for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I appreciate the opportunity to come back and talk to this group again. I was here a month ago talking about a different bill. And I want to be clear about just the number of bills that our group is bringing forward. You've heard from individuals that are receiving services. You've heard from families. You've heard from providers like mine. You've heard from associations. We're not bringing all of these bills in hopes that one or two might pass. We're bringing all of them in desperate need that they all pass. And then we might be okay. That's the reality of the situation. As we talk today, there are dozens of people in Minnesota hospitals, not because they're injured, not because they're sick, but because there are no staff to provide them care. As an organization, we say no multiple times a day. We're getting calls from hospital social workers, from desperate mothers, from neighbors, from people themselves, and we have to say no because we don't have your support and haven't had it in a couple of years. That's our reality. At the heart of the issue, as we've already talked about, people can no longer afford to be a caregiver. We pay $16 an hour. That's better than the average. And that is not supported by the rates that we're given. Okay, we're price takers in every way. You assign us a rate, and all of our vendors and the market and the world around us assigns us prices. It's our job to make those things work. They haven't in years. At that wage, depending on family size and location, the income of the folks that are providing care in our homes, they're eligible for SNAP, they're eligible for food supports. So the folks that this group and the governor held up as heroes during the pandemic are sent home to receive government benefits themselves. That's our reality. Frankly, I can't sleep at night with that reality. And we'll talk a little bit more about the impacts of that. But more importantly, my staff can't sleep at night because they have to work a second or a third job just to make things work if they're to stay in our field. Most of them don't. As they leave, well, I guess before I get there, Minnesota's failure to maintain a wage, a livable wage for DSPs has had devastating impacts on the folks that we serve. And as our staff leave, they're taking their knowledge, their abilities, and most importantly, their relationships with them. As they leave, providers have two options. So my organization, we have two options. We can close, and that's happened. Hundreds of beds have closed in our state. So we can close, take away options, take away hope, displace people from the homes that in some cases has been theirs for decades. That's option one. Option two is that we can choose to lose money and hope that someday we might get your support. That's what Living Well has done. And last year we lost over $2 million as an organization just to do the right thing, to not displace people, to not send them to hospitals, to not put them in nursing homes, and to hope again that we'll have support. On top of that, we spend well over $200,000 a year on our recruiting efforts just to try to create bonuses, to try to create reasons for people to stay and reasons for people to come and do this work. And to be frank, it is not working. We're 100 people short. Okay, we're facing, I don't know, the largest snowstorm to come in two decades. We don't have people to work in our homes. So the reality is that tomorrow or Thursday, our staff will be sleeping in the group home because we weren't able to get somebody else there. We don't have extra people. And when we have situations like what's about to happen, all of us are stressed. Our group home system is broken. And we will see that in the next 2 days. Our proposal that we're bringing here today would bring support to the state's providers in the form of grant dollars to help us bolster our employment proposition. It would help us compete with the market around us to provide retention bonuses. It would allow us to finally be able to say thank you to the people who have stayed with us. We haven't been able to do that. We could recognize their efforts. And to keep pace with the market around us, we could help, you know, provide support with childcare, transportation, schooling, things like that. It's important to know we're not asking for extravagant benefits. These are basic human needs that we are asking you for. And it's not only for the people that we serve, it's for our staff. It's not a high bar, folks, but we're still reaching. Our industry is reaching for that very low bar. It doesn't have to be this way, and to be clear, it hasn't always been. Direct care used to be a great alternative to other entry-level jobs. When I first started as a DSP, I was making more than my friends. I was having fun. I was out in the community doing all the things that I love to do. And so did the folks in the group home. That was 20 years ago. And due to the choices of this group and others like it, we're now in this situation. And it's only the choices of this group and those others like it that will get us out of it. I've extended offers to everybody in this room, everyone at the table here, to visit our group homes, to meet the folks that we serve, to meet our staff, and see why we so desperately need your help. I hope that you'll take me up on that offer. And if you haven't received that offer, here it is now. But I'm nearly certain everybody at this table and in the Senate group has received that offer from me. I would love to show off the great work that we do despite our challenges. But if we fail to get your support this session, I will expect that each of you come to our group homes, the ones that are still open anyway, and explain to folks why we failed to get your support again. I get that there's a lot going on. I don't envy anyone at this table, and I want to say thank you. You do a really important job. So please know I recognize that. And I recognize that you probably get a bunch of knuckleheads like me coming in every day asking for really important stuff. Everything that you guys hear is critical stuff. I get it. And that leads to tough choices. But this is not one of those tough decisions. This is basic human needs. It's your responsibility. Please. Help.
Thank you so much, Mr. Gillespie. We hear you, and we'll take you up to the challenge to come and visit some, which I've already done some. In fact, I'm scheduled to go to an assisted living tomorrow.
Good.
So hopefully I can make it if the weather permits.
Well, yeah. If that one follows through, give me a call. We'll get you out to one of ours.
We'll do. Do we have any other person who wants to testify on this bill in the public? Seeing none, we'll go to member discussions. Representative Farm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to see some other approaches included in the activity. One would be a special deduction for people working these positions, so that instead of you do the grants and this other funding route, and there's overhead and there's advertising, et cetera. I would think the simplest way is just whenever they do their taxes, they check the box and they get a special deduction that incentivizes working there and staying there, or a state-funded account that can be used for medical, child care, transportation expenses that they could draw from. Just like I have money I put into a flexible medical. Well, if the state funded an account set up that could be used for expenses, and that would be another route, again, where you don't have the overhead from doing a grant or these other programs. And then maybe a tax-free annual payment. In other words, directly to the people that are doing the work, and you know, anybody that's recruiting, hey, we're hiring, and oh, by the way, they're going to include this information. And I just, we need to be a little more creative than thinking that just doing grants and throwing money into the same, you know, groups that run the churn, and I don't think we get the effects out. We need to do a variety of things and be more creative. So I know I've said other things with the author about, you know, retention bonuses and other things funded. We've got a lot of money, one-time money. Throw, you know, $100 million into an account for retention bonuses and set up whatever the program would be, and then that can run for a few years, and maybe we have a better idea, maybe not. We can throw more money in, but one size isn't fitting even most now. Thank you.
Ms. Grefstrom, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Quam. I really appreciate those ideas, and I think we are right there with you that one size does not fit all. So, you know, this is one solution that we're bringing to the table. You know, Mr. Gillespie referenced a lot of different proposals that ARM is bringing forward, and I know providers are doing a lot of creative, unique things to try to bring staff into their workforce beyond just the legislation that we have in front of you. So I certainly don't want you to think that this is it, that this is all that we're relying on, because every day we're trying to be innovative and find new solutions about how we can bring folks in and keep them. So that is certainly something that we're always talking about. Specifically to this, to your point about the tax deduction, I would just, you know, as we've been talking to our providers and our staff, some of the challenges with that approach is when you're making $15 an hour, you need the resources right then. It's really hard to wait and, you know, that whole year to get that tax break back or to get, you know, some kind of thing back with your taxes. And so trying to find something that would help folks immediately, I think, is what we're trying to do with this bill. And then just wanting to, you know, obviously the ongoing need to raise wages. But I agree that we need to be creative, that we need to find multiple solutions and not just rely on one idea or one size fits all. I think that's very well taken by me. So.
Lead New Bentley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Hicks. I think this is ultimately a good use of one-time money. And thank you, Ms. Grabstrom, for coming up with creative solutions, because I know that it has been really, really difficult and a burden to figure out how your industry is going to continue, and particularly your providers. And frankly, as Mr. Gillespie indicated, I know that it's been extraordinarily difficult. While I have not visited your homes, I have visited homes in my district, and certainly I know the good work that you guys are doing, and the folks who are involved in the care are doing a wonderful job. So I think this is a good use of one-time money. I do have a couple of questions for Representative Hicks. I'm looking specifically at the awareness building campaign for recruitment. And again, I think it's a good idea. We have to be creative and figure out how to get new people in. Again, devil's always in the details for me. I appreciate that the commissioner is being directed to select an outside vendor. I think that makes way more sense than trying to do it in-house. I'm wondering if we would consider on line 4.14, it says the development of recruitment materials for the direct care workforce to be featured on. And to me, that sounds like a directive that it must be featured in all of these different ways. And I wonder if we would want to change the to may to open that up so that the professional vendors I'm sure that they would know the best ways to reach the different demographics that we want to reach, whatever it may be. But might want to consider just a little change there, just in case this is interpreted as overly prescriptive. And like I said, I don't know that it would be, but it could be interpreted as overly prescriptive. And then the other piece of that, because this grant will primarily be going to an outside vendor or vendors to perform the actual work. I'm hoping that you would also consider on line 4.26 a cap on the administrative costs. Typically in a grant program, we would like to see at least a 10% cap, which would still provide $400,000 to the department simply for the administration of the grant, not the actual program itself. So I would love if we could also see a cap on the administrative costs.
Yes, thank you, Lead New Brunley. I actually like both of those ideas, so we will get looking at those as well. I think those are really good points. You know, our previous testifier kind of said all of the things that I've been thinking. This is one puzzle piece. There are multiple puzzle pieces. We've heard multiple bills that will help rebuild our care structures. And the demographer gave a presentation about the state's demographics. And it talked about, you know, birth rate and immigration and aging seniors and all of those things. And the presentation was, frankly, a little depressing, because when you looked at the numbers, it was like this math is not going to work. But at the end of the presentation, she brought us all back to what can we do and what can we control. And she said something that has stuck with me now for months. And she said, we need to make our most important work our most valued work. And that statement has stuck with me for months now, because this and a lot of the other things we've talked about in this committee, right? PCA, elder care, support for children. This is the most important work. And we as legislators have a responsibility to make sure that we vote for bills and packages and solutions that also make it the most valued work. And so I thank you all for hearing this today, and I renew the motion. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I was trying to get attention, but actually it was kind of on what Representative New Brindley was saying regarding the outside vendors. And I guess I have a little bit of hesitation about that, because we're learning with our background studies that's also an outside vendor. It's from another state, leading actually to an entirely different country that's coming in and providing these services. And so I would just really like whatever vendors we utilize to be Minnesota vendors, if possible. You know, I mean, I think that knowing our media network and making sure that we're supporting local businesses is a priority. And just as we learn and we dissect another piece of where vendors can kind of fall apart, that would be a suggestion. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, the education lens of my life says we're not doing very good at recruiting in our high schools or our community colleges or tribal colleges for professionals in these fields. And so I would, I guess, as we're kind of building this and giving suggestions on areas that we could recruit, it's more than just putting ads up on TVs and radio stations. It's talking to our kids and getting them connected so they can see what this work of love actually feels like. You can do as many, I used to work in media, you can do as many commercials as you want. It's actually providing those experiences and building those networks that I think is where we're gonna see more long-term investment, because a job is one thing, being actually like invested in a career is completely different. So those would be my suggestions around that area. Mainly back to the point that I really, really, really want to make sure that we have clear parameters to make sure we're not giving outside vendors opportunities here that are actually more harmful than helpful. Thank you.
Did you have any other follow-up on that?
Sure. Thank you, Representative Keeler. I had not heard that about the background checks. That is frankly alarming that it's being outsourced not only out of Minnesota but out of this country. That is alarming. So thanks for bringing that to our attention.
That I know that this bill has got sections that are directing the Commission of Department of Economic Development. I think, Representative Hicks, if it's okay, we should refer this bill to the workforce so that we can talk about that section of the awareness campaign. So if you will make a motion to reconsider your amendment and to
yes.
Consider your motion so that this bill is re-referred to the Workforce Finance Committee.
Yes, I would like to re-refer this bill to the Workforce Committee. Workforce, yeah.
Okay. Representative Hicks wants to reconsider her motion to re-refer, as amended, to re-refer to the Workforce Finance and Policy Committee. So that's the motion before us. Any discussions? See none. With that, I think I'll renew that motion, that House File 813 as amended to be re-referred to Workforce Policy and Finance. And all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? See none. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Workforce Policy and Finance Committee. Members, on Thursday, we will not have our regular meeting, as far as many of you already know, due to the weather conditions. So we will be reposting the bills that were scheduled for Thursday for another day. I just wanted to inform everyone that we will not have the regular scheduled Thursday meeting. With no further agenda items before us, we are now adjourned.